We're gonna dance one of the rhythm of Haiti we took from the Manding, community of Balan in the north of Haiti. We're gonna take Haiti with their rhythm.
Welcome to Wanda's Picks, the Black Arts and Culture Program of the African Sisters Media Network. And that was Bookman Experience, and they were playing a Mandinga drumming piece. And I just thought it would be really fitting on the Independence Day for Nigeria. And we have in the studio Chike Noafia, who is artistic director of the Silicon Valley African Film Festival in its third season. Congratulations and Happy New Year, or Happy Independence. What do you say with regards to that?
Well, thanks. You know, my home country, Nigeria, is celebrating its 52nd independence. Mm-hmm. So, we're excited. The country has come of age at 52 years old, I think. One definitely finds oneself. So, yeah.
And then, you know, thinking about, you know, Haiti, you know, the first African nation outside of the continent to free itself from slavery, you know, with, you know, Bookman and Fatiman and all the generals, you know, Toussaint being one of the more famous ones. But, so anyway, independence on the mind here. So if you were at home, what would you be doing on Independence Day? And since you're not at home, you're here in Silicon Valley, what are you doing?
Well, of course, like any country's national day, it's a public holiday at home. And so there are all the typical festivities that you would have, parades and, you know, parties and celebrations. And since this falls on a day such as this, which is a Monday, it gives people an extended weekend to have a good time. And so basically beginning Friday of last week, you know, back home, people will be throwing all kinds of parties. Families will be going out to, depending on the weather, either go to the beach to go hang out or go to clubs or, you know, basically all the fun stuff of a shared celebration.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a time for reflection. And for those of us in the diaspora, it's also a time for us to, you know, hold the home country dear to our heart and lift it up in prayers and all that stuff, and also re-examine, you know, how far we've come on the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and it's really amazing, and I'm sure this is no accident, because, you know, you are a scholar and an artist, you know, filmmaker yourself, wonderful poet. That's how I met you, as a poet and a drummer. Because, you know, the Poetry Celebration is going to be 23 years old in February. And I remember when you used to participate in the African American Celebration through Poetry at the West Oakland Branch Library. So we go way back. Yeah, and now you have this wonderful film festival, and your opening feature sort of is a reflective piece on Nigeria, right?
Yes, yes. I'm honored to be the artistic director for the Silicon Valley African Film Festival. The third edition is coming up in less than 2 weeks. We open
mm-hmm.
up on Friday, October the 12th, and the festival is a whole weekend festival. We wrap it up with an award ceremony on Sunday, October 14th. But in the course of the weekend, we showcase 35 films from 15 different African countries. And as your question suggests, the opening feature film on Friday, October 12th, is certainly a must-see film. It's a reflective piece. It's called Freedom. And this is a film that was produced in Nigeria in 1957, for those that would think we're talking about something else. We're talking
mm-hmm.
about a film that was produced 55 years ago that predates Nigeria's independence. And those of you that are scholars of history will recall that the country of Ghana got her independence in 1957. And so this is an incredible find for us, and we're excited. It's a full-length, colorful feature film that is set in a fictional African country that is just on the verge of independence. And the beauty of this film is in so many layers. Not only was it produced by Africans, but it's actually an ensemble cast of actors from Nigeria as well as from a few other African countries. They brought in actors from Ghana, from South Africa, from, you know, they came together in Nigeria to realize this film. And just to watch a film and watch brothers and sisters, you know, revealing themselves on screen and sharing with us their hopes and dreams of an independent Africa is something I'm sure is going to provoke a lot of post-screening conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Talk to us a bit, and then I'll definitely want you to maybe sort of talk about some of the films, because I think, I'm trying to think, how many countries are represented this year?
15.
And how many films?
35 films.
35 films, right, yeah. And you have, you know, established directors as well as, you know, new up-and-coming directors, and you have, you know, a nice distribution of both male and female directors, but they're all from continental Africa. So it's like, wow. So tell us about, you know, the vision around the Silicon Valley African Film Festival, that you were going to be showcasing films from the continent. And I remember one year we were talking about how you went to FESPACO, I believe, and you, is that correct?
Yes.
Right, yeah, and we were talking about sort of, you know, some of the, you know, you were looking at sort of ways to get the work out that you saw there, and also as a way as well to support film production, because it's not an inexpensive craft and art form.
Yes. FESPACO, for those that don't know, of course, is the biggest film festival on the African continent. It happens every 2 years and is held typically in the odd year, odd numbered year. And so I was at FESPACO. It's held in Burkina Faso. And I was at FESPACO in 2009. And yes, when I came back, I remember we had that conversation. And, you know, when you go to FESPACO and spend 2 or 3 weeks, you know, just being in this charged atmosphere of thousands and thousands of filmmakers and film enthusiasts from all over the world coming together to celebrate African cinema, it is an amazing experience. And I had a film, of course, in that festival that year. But, you know, hanging out with, you know, brothers and sisters from the continent that come to showcase their work, it dawned on me that we have so much talent on that continent in the art of film, but unfortunately not, there's not a lot of platform for people to showcase their work over here. And this has always been, of course, what I've been doing here in the Bay Area in California. And so on my return, it became evident that we needed to begin to address that issue, but more so enrich our community by showcasing, you know, work from Africa by Africans. And it was important for us to curate a festival that would give the African filmmaker a voice to tell their own story their own way. And so for us, if the story has to be about Rwanda, for instance, we would love the Rwandan filmmaker in Rwanda to make that film so that we can get their own narrative. There's nothing wrong with any other person going to make a film about Rwanda, don't get me wrong. But I think particularly for our own festival, it is important for us that the voice, as we call it, is first voice, is the person, you know, that feels it, that knows it, you know, that feels it and tells their story from their perspective. And that's not often the case in terms of mainstream. And so that's what we've been doing for 3 years. And we're happy and glad that we're able to present that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about your selections this year. Do you have any countries represented this year that you haven't had in the past 2 years? And, just to give us some of your highlights. I was trying to watch some of these films last night, and my computer must be too slow or something. Because I couldn't watch any of them. I was like,
No.
Yeah, but you've got like these great animated shorts, and I really liked the one. It looked like it was going to be good. I couldn't watch it, but it looked good just from the first frame of the one about the dad who was having a bad day.
Oh, domestic disturbance. You know, we have some just amazing selection of films. You know, spread all over the continent. It's, you know, we received about 70 submissions this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much we can program in one weekend. And so we had our review panel look through the films and begin to pare them down. And finally, we're able to accommodate 35 films.
Mm-hmm.
We have some beautiful animation pieces from Kenya. Kenya seems to be showcasing very strongly in the animation department. You know, for the 3 years we've done this festival, we've always received incredible animation work from young filmmakers out of Kenya, out of Egypt, for instance. We have the very short animation piece from Egypt, Honiyan's Shoe. Actually, that film, that animation piece, just won the equivalent of the African Oscars in animation. And so we're glad that Dr. Ghazala, who's a friend of mine, is able to get it to us to screen in our festival. Where do I start? There's a beautiful short film. It's a short documentary piece that came out of South Africa by a young South African filmmaker about soccer. You know, and there's a soccer league in one of the townships. And but the interesting story about this film is that this soccer league is only for grandmothers. And it is a beautiful film, a very inspirational film to see these grannies kit up in their soccer gear and go play soccer. And how it all started is explained in the film. and, you know, the pushback, you know, they had, you know, these grandmothers couldn't fashion themselves wearing anything else other than tying their sarong. And so initially when they started, that was how they were playing. But then slowly they transitioned from that to pants, and now finally now they're wearing shorts. And it's a beautiful film, a very delightful film, but it's also a film that inspires us. Alongside that is also another short piece, another documentary piece called Girl Fight. It's a documentary piece out of South Africa that follows the story of this young girl, a 17-year-old girl that wants to be a professional boxer. And you just see her pushing through, you know, the limitations, so to speak. And it's also an inspirational piece to see her push through, you know, a male-dominated sport in a male-dominated society, and reach for her goals and reach for the stars. So we have these kinds of pieces. We also have some, you know, amazing narrative films. This year we are giving an award to one of Nigeria's veteran filmmakers, Tunde Kolani, and we have his new film called Mami. Is going to play as our centerpiece film on Saturday at 8 p.m. Gosh, you know, we have 35 films, so it's hard to really begin to...
Oh, well, we can narrow it down a little bit. I've got some that look really interesting to me. I was looking at Elegy for Revolutionary, and I was just thinking when I read the description about sort of looking at revolution not necessarily having to be a violent takeover. And I had an interview on Friday with James Kilgore, and he spent 27 years on the run and spent a lot of it. I think he lived in South Africa and Southern Africa, and then finally the United States caught up with him. He was a member of the ANC, I believe, and sort of working. He also was a part of the Sudanese Liberation Army, and sort of looking at, you know, people think about, you know, sort of the violent arm, you know, the armed wing of the ANC, Nkotuwe Sizwe, and then the other arm where, you know, people were looking at nonviolent resistance. And so that's what I thought when I read about Elegy for a revolutionary sort of reflecting on the tools for revolution. And I was wondering if you could talk about that film. And then I was looking at another film, because some of the films, you know, thematically, these directors are African directors, but the themes that these films cover are, you know, global. I mean, you know, we can resonate with them here in America. We can resonate with them throughout the diaspora because, you know, unemployment is something that's not just affecting the character, the protagonist in Waiting Lines, you know, which is directed by Daniel. How do you pronounce Daniel's last name?
Which film?
Oriahi.
Oh yeah. Waiting Lines. Yeah.
Oriahi. That's a short
Nigerian piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In Nigeria. Yeah, and then I was thinking about the film Lilies of the Ghetto, and I'm like, whoa, that sounds like a film that young people need to see because,
right.
You know, they're like negotiating, do I want to be a member of this gang and how do I change my life and not get killed? Because what I read is that if you have to die, you can't like just change your mind. It's like, oh, I don't want to be a member of the gang anymore. You have to, you know, you give up your life. You can't just decide to leave. And so this young man is sort of having at a turning point and trying to figure out what he wants to do. And I'm like, oh, that looks really good. Who's the director on that one?
That's actually also it's a film out of Nigeria by
mm-hmm.
one of the rising stars of, you know, our film ecology. Joseph Obaka is the
mm-hmm.
guy that directed
mm-hmm.
that, Ladies of the Ghetto. It's a very beautiful film. And yes, you know, you made an interesting comment that even though these films are made in Africa, they have a broad appeal. But that's the point, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes people assume that, you know, the film is made in Africa, so it's whatever. But the thing is, I mean, we watch films that are made here in the United States, and we just
mm-hmm.
assume that, yes, that's how the world speaks. everybody feels pain. If it's employment, everybody feels it. If it's love, people fall in love, people fall out of love. You know, the beauty of art is that art humanizes all of us. And so any one of these films speaks to the core of human nature and human existence, whether it does through a spotlight on the vices or virtues of life. And so fundamentally, anyone can see themselves or their society in any of these films. You know, like you pointed out, the film Waiting Lines is a short mm-hmm. film by a young Nigerian filmmaker, but it's apt and it's very, very poignant in the extent that it deals with the issues of unemployment and trying to find a job. And you see this young man, you know, it's basically a snapshot, a day in the life of, so to speak. But he's looking for work. He's very, very qualified. But, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
What happens when you meet those long lines? Everybody's as qualified as you are. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, that's the same. Lilies of the Ghetto, like you mentioned, is the same. You know, mm-hmm. deals with it from a different perspective, tries to give a voice to the young people that are often forgotten, and the government, and indicts the government and the community and all of us, basically, for looking the other way when our young brothers and sisters need all the help they can get in order to, you know, to become responsible and, you know, productive adults. And so, mm-hmm. You know, in that vacuum, then the vices of society take a hold and they begin to stare left. And so mm-hmm. that's what that film tries to bring about. And oftentimes when they make that left turn, for them to come right out of it, you know, sometimes it's a question of, you know, dying in order to come out of it or not dying. And so that's definitely. So all the films will give you, that's why we call it Africa Through African Lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically telling you the story of the people from an African lens, and then you can connect with it, you know, from your own, you know, framework of reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, certainly. Looking at sort of along the same line, Zebu and the Photo Fish, out of Kenya, and that's Zipporah Nyaru. How do you pronounce the last name?
Nyaruri.
Yeah, in Nyaruri. Yeah. And that one, you know, takes place in a fishing village, and Zebu is a witty 10-year-old who is forced to grow up and shoulder the responsibility of getting his family out of debt. And there are quite a few films that sort of look at debt, moccasins kind of, and Looking for Leonga. Looking for Leonga is out of Namibia. And Moccasins is another out of Kenya. And then I was looking at the film, because you've got a couple of films, I think. This one here is by Ben Zulu, Mwana Sikana?
Okay, Mwana Sikana, yeah.
Yeah, tell us about that film.
Oh, it's actually, it's a film that's out of Zimbabwe. And you know, the film has been around for a few years, but it's never really received much, you know, much play. And there's a film that I also personally wanted us to show in this this festival because of the themes it does explore. And and you would find, you know, as in some other films, you know, filmmakers are taking responsibility of using their lens, you know, to open us up to some of the issues, whether they be contemporary issues or issues that come, you know, from old. And Mwana Sikana is one of those films that, you know, basically is a narrative piece, so it's all fiction, but it's set in, you know, in a state where we can begin to question some of the, you know, some of these things that we carry from old. It's a story, simple story of a young girl who really, really thirsts and wants to go to school and wants to achieve and become her best by getting the best of education that she could. You know, but you see her wrestling in this film because her father, the guy who, you know, the father's character in the film is a very dominant character, and but is one that comes from the very, very old school of thought that believes that, you know, putting a young girl through school is a waste of time, a waste of money. And so the best thing he believes is for her to go ahead and go get married, you know. But the film also ends with an interesting twist and turn of things. But I think it's a very important film because it shows, you know, that kind, which still exists in some places or in some families, depending on where it is. But at least it highlights that and brings it to the front where we can talk about it. And so, Ben Zulu does a very, very beautiful work with that piece. Well-written film as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were telling us about the film that, you know, the whole idea of, you know, girls and women as property, and, you know, even today, you know, girls and women are sold. Girls are, you know, traded and sold as if they are, you know, of no value. And there's a film called To Educate a Girl. It was a part of the Mill Valley Film Festival last year or the year before. And the book Half the Sky, and there actually is a film series that starts tonight on PBS, October 1st and 2nd, and is looking at, as part of the Women and Girls Lead Initiative, and is looking at educating girls and providing proper health care for women and girls and helping women and girls develop economic independence and autonomy, because then they're more valued, you know, within the communities and within their families. So it's really great that, you know, that you have this film, you know, in the festival. And then I was looking at some other films that you have, you know, Sophia's Homecoming, which is also in Southern Africa. That's Namibia. And that's directed by Richard Paklepa. I'm just killing all these names. Oh my God. And I was wondering, you've got the film Chumo, which is from Tanzania, East Africa, Bride Price. So you've got, you know, some pretty provocative and sort of cutting edge, kind of maybe not necessarily politically correct, but, you know, this is the reality, you know, these films that, these stories that these directors are telling, which is really wonderful.
Right, right. And I think it's very important. But one of the things I also want to quickly point out is oftentimes, you know, Africa is cast in this whole, you know, blanket of a monolith. And I think that's sometimes very, very misleading. I know that the New York Times story, you know, or any of the Pikini, you know, front page or headline, you know, New York Times had, you know, girls in Africa, education is an uphill fight. You know, that's Africa, you know. Mm-hmm. And something happens in Paris, something happens in London, and then the same thing will happen in Africa. You know what I mean? You know, so mm-hmm. it's as if Africa is now being equated geographically in size to London or Paris, mm-hmm. you know, and it's oftentimes misleading. And so that's why it's important for us to understand that Africa is not a monolith. And I think it's a misstatement, if you will, for anyone to pick an issue and say educating girls in Africa is so. And mm-hmm. that's not true. You can easily, you know, put your lens in any corner of the United States and say the same thing, but you're mm-hmm. not going to generalize that and say that's the way it is in the United States. Mm-hmm. I come from a family where all my sisters all have graduate degrees, you know, some of them more than we do. And so you find in so many families and so many communities and so many societies and so many countries, including some of the countries that we're talking about, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think it must be understood. But that's not to say that the issue is still not there. That's mm-hmm. not to say that in some families, in some communities. So when these filmmakers are making their films, mm-hmm. they're not saying, this is government policy. I mean, I'm just saying that the way the media portrays mm-hmm. a lot of these things, and I'm saying this particularly mainly for your listeners, mm-hmm. because oftentimes those statements, you know, are made and people look at, you know, some of these things. Africa got a president before United States still doesn't have one yet, you know, so, mm-hmm. you know, and so I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, a lot of the mainstream media categorization or characterization of African issues relating to whether it be women, children, men, employment, whatever it is, the way they portray Africa as just this tiny little place that one thing happens and it's happening all over the place is one of the things we're also trying to combat. And so you come to this festival, you get to see, you know, Africa in all its, you know, texture and complexities and diversities and all of that, and commonalities as well.
Mm-hmm. And oh, certainly, certainly.
What people get out of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, with regards to the Half the Sky, the authors do not focus on Africa. It's global, as you just mentioned. And you know, we look here in the United States. You know, right here in Alameda County, you know, we look at the education, you know, for our young people, and we see that there are great disparities depending on what city you're in Alameda County. If you're in Alameda City, you're in Oakland, you're in the Oakland Flatlands versus the Oakland Hills, you know, Berkeley, Richmond, San Francisco.
Right.
It sort of depends on where you are, you know, San Jose,
right.
Santa Clara. It just depends on where you are and how much money is in that particular, you know, I guess property values in districts or whatever. It's not supposed to be like that. I thought, you know, all of the districts were supposed to get equal money, but I don't think that's what happens because of what plays out in the classrooms. You know, a lot of kids are not getting the type of education that qualifies them for, you know, the Stanford universities, the UC system, or college or university in general, which is really unfortunate. Yeah, but I wanted to ask you, if you could talk some more about how the weekend's going to run, because I know you're going to be having, I think you're having like a panel discussion about diaspora citizenship, because one of your co-presenters or one of your partners was actually at the diaspora conference in South Africa this past May.
Yes. The festival opens on Friday, October 12th. At 5:30 in the evening, we will begin the opening ceremonies and a red carpet reception. So we invite people to come and walk the red carpet and get their photos taken and mingle, mix. You know, we're going to do the whole nine yards, and we're going to have African drumming, we're going to have African food, you know, all of that stuff going on. And then we move into the auditorium where we now do the formal opening ceremony. The mayor of the city is going to be there to present us a proclamation declaring the weekend Silicon Valley African Film Festival weekend in the city of Mountain View. We're also having assembly member for the state of California for our district, assembly member Paul Fong. He's going to be there at the opening ceremonies, and he'll be there to present certificates, you know, to all the filmmakers in the festival. And then we have our presenting partners coming from out of country and in country. And then after that, we now join into the opening night feature film, and that's when we show the film Freedom at 8 p.m. And that closes us out for the night. Saturday, we come back, we start screening films again from 11 in the morning up until about 10 p.m. at night. However, on Saturday at 4 p.m., we're going to have a two-hour, very intense conversation. We call it the African Diaspora Summit. It's going to explore the roles of diaspora Africans in the African Renaissance. One of my colleagues, who happens to be executive director of the African Diaspora Network, our co-presenters in this year's film festival, Almaz Negash, she was invited to South Africa in May when the Africa Union met. And at this meeting, the Africa Union resolved formally for the first time to recognize the African diaspora as its sixth region. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of implications of that in terms of, you know, the role the diaspora Africans can play in the African Renaissance. A lot of strategic planning that is going on in terms of investments, in terms of mutual relationships in the arts and technology, education, all whatnot. And I think we need to begin to unpack what all that means. As a matter of fact, the Africa Union has now appointed a diaspora ambassador to the United States. You know, so there's some of these things are happening, and folks don't know a lot about it. And we thought, you know, it would make sense for us to use our film festival as a forum where we can at least begin that conversation and begin to point people in the direction of what is going on. We intend to have some follow-up dialogue after that, but this will be almost like a kickoff point for that conversation where we can begin to unpack what the new role of the diaspora Africans mean and how we can begin to see Africa with a new lens of mutual interest, mutual partnerships, and a common destiny, so to speak, going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes, certainly. And I was just thinking about President Gaddafi, the late President Gaddafi, and the former president of Senegal, Gaddafi of Libya, and President Abdul Wahid, former president of Senegal, at the FESMEN, the Festival of Black Art and Culture, were looking at the African Renaissance. That was the theme of FESMEN in, I think it was 2010, I believe. And your work as having your Iriki Theater and your filmmaking, and you look at your latest film, Sabar, you've been looking at sort of the Pan-African, the connections between Africans in the diaspora and Africans, continental Africans, and you told me about these plays that you wrote. Just really quickly, could you tell us about your vision as an artist and as a culture worker, and sort of repairing the rift that happened, 500 plus years ago when our ancestors were taken or sold from Africa and spread out throughout the diaspora.
Wow. okay. Let's see how much time we have, because I love the question and I love talking to this. But let me see how brief I can be with this conversation. It's been, it's definitely been, I think somehow it's part of my DNA to always look at, our common destiny as Africans, wherever we find ourselves on this, expression we call planet Earth. And I think, and this is not new, this thought precedes me, precedes a whole bunch of folks and goes all the way back to, the giants of our history, both on the continent and in diaspora. And for those that understand, our history, you'll find that the history, the struggles, or the movement, an agitation for freedom, for civil rights, for all of that stuff, both on the continent and outside the continent, has always been a joint struggle, has always been a common struggle, has always been a coordinated movement. A lot of Africans, might not even know, but I hope they do, that if you look at the role of diaspora Africans in the process of securing the African independence, it's huge. As a matter of fact, in the days in the 30s and the 40s, diaspora Africans used to organize what they call the Pan-African Congress. And actually the Pan-African Congress that was organized in Britain in 1945 became the cornerstone for independent Africa, where brothers and sisters converged, we're talking about people like Nyerere, Nkrumah, Sengol, Azikiwe. I mean, they all got together and began to do, formulate strategies. And joining them in this struggle, we are brothers from the Caribbean, from the United States, strategizing together, because everyone understood that until the continent, the homeland, became independent, nothing else was really going to push and move forward. I'm not sure how many people know that even when Ghana finally got her independence in 57, Dr. King and his colleagues were right there to witness that. And when Dr. King came back to the United States, he preached and he gave an incredible speech about the birth of a new nation, and describing his experience in Ghana and articulating our common and joint destiny going forward. And the fact that the struggle the struggle of Africans, and when Ghana got its independence and had a seat at the United Nations and set up a consulate in New York and all of that, the boost that that gave to the civil rights struggle here in the United States was enormous, and on and on. But anyway, for me, it's always been interesting that somewhere along the line, I think we all got too comfortable in our different, you know, locales, so to speak, and became silos. And so there isn't enough, in my view, of that collaboration, that understanding of our joint history and our common destiny. It looks like it's beginning to seep away. And what I've tried to do in my work, whether it be through poetry, through stage productions, or through film, is to always, not slap that in the face of anybody, but just kind of to weave stories that can show how we are all interconnected and should and continue to be interconnected. And so that's what basically explains my work. And I think it's, and that's me as an artist. So that's my lens, for the work that I do.
Yeah. Give our audience, because I know the play, I think, I don't know, did you produce the play? But then you filmed it too, An Incident at, is it Choctaw? That one, and then can you give us the names of the plays that you produced that were specific? Yeah, I think it was, I think you described it as like a love story when you were telling me about it when we met and your brother was there. Remember?
All right.
And I don't know, like, I'm really sorry that I missed it too. I'm like, oh, you have to bring that back.
Right. Well, there have been a couple of, the Choctaw piece is actually a documentary piece, but, that's a different story altogether. It's called A Killing in Choctaw, but that was a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But the plays that I had produced that speak to the kinds of themes that we're talking about, there was one called Wake Up Africa. Wake Up Africa is a very, it's a political play, as the title suggests, but it's a play that that basically follows Africa's children today coming together to look at the continent. And so they encounter Mama Africa, and they're arguing amongst each other, trying to figure out if she's asleep or she's dead, and they're trying to poke at her to get a sense of whether she's reacting or... And so in that, in the process, they begin talking about, some of them have the view, I think she's dead. Let us go home. Let's leave her alone. And somebody, is saying, well, I think she's asleep. I think we might be able to wake her up. So that's the whole metaphor of the play. But in the process of doing that, they begin to spew out their own perceptions of Africa. And this is including the children from the continent as well as from the diaspora. They're all together and, they're arguing amongst each other what to do with this woman, this old woman, as they call her. And whilst they're in the process of trying to figure what to do, Mama Africa stirs and she overhears them and she begins to talk to them. And they start freaking out because she starts calling them, by their true names and begins to chastise them and say, how is it that, that you're here talking about me and I was not even invited to this conversation, and looks into the audience. When we put on a workshop version of this, it was really eerie to some audience members because at a point, Mama Africa says, turn on the lights. And we really bring up the house lights, because she said, turn on the lights. I need to see who you've invited to this conversation. And so we turn on the lights and people start staring in their seats. And Mama Africa says, look, I can't even believe. I even see my own children sitting in the audience, and none of you had the guts to get up and challenge what you're hearing, And so people then wonder, well, are we supposed to talk or not, But we play that trick with the audience, and at that point, you got them, and people stay with you. And so Mama Africa then says, enough already, enough of this chatter. If you want to know my story, come, let me take you to the very beginning. And so they follow her backstage, we close the curtain, open the curtain, and the actual play begins. And so we tell the story of Mama Africa through Africa's voice And she takes us through, including the middle passage, including today, and all of that stuff. And that's, and you know, and that's the that, that's the play. At the end of it all, at the end of every play, especially plays such as this, I have my actors come out on stage and they sit and we have a conversation with the audience. I remember when we put this on at UC Santa Barbara, it was nobody wanted to leave. People just sat there and wanted to talk and talk and talk all night. Mm-hmm. From, you know, the guilt they felt when Mama Africa started addressing them to, you know, all of that stuff. And so that was that. And there's another play as well that we call Bridges that, you know, looks at it from a different perspective. And so it's, you know, it's always been part of my work. And of course, even in my film Sabah, which is mm-hmm. a dance, you know, which is a film that looks at dance and dance mm-hmm. as a metaphor, you would find the story of an African-American born, you know, young woman who begins to encounter the Senegalese dance Sabah, and through the dance begins to discover who she really is. And you know, you see native-born Africans and African-Americans and diaspora Africans all connecting in the film and living out their full experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, you do this so well, Chike. You know, sort of invite, you know, this sharing of the richness that is African culture. That did not go away, even though we were separated. And so when the woman, the protagonist, hears the call of the drum, you know, she can't resist it. You know, it has a real life, and it calls us back to who she is. And similarly, I just think about, you know, you said that after the performances, the audience didn't want to leave. And, you know, there when one thinks about sort of the terrorism around the separation of Africans from, you know, from their homeland and the violence of, you know, the structural and institutional racism that we've been encountering, no matter where we are in the diaspora, and then the underdevelopment of the continent, you know, the richest place on the planet. Everything comes from Africa, yet Africans are benefiting the least from all that. So, you know, one could certainly see why people would want to sit and talk, because how often do you get a chance to talk about this? How often do you get to talk, to reflect on what we've lost and what we have and how we can, you know, how much we still have and how much we can benefit from the Ma'afa to be able to move forward and you know, and sort of, you know, reflecting on our history, you know, via, you know, sort of the whole notion of Sankofa, and then forgiving ourselves for these moves that were not necessarily fortuitous, or even, you know, or that we even knew what they meant. I'm talking, you know, sort of historically and presently. So, you know, it's just great. And then, you know, your African Film Festival is just, you know, further opportunity to have these great, great conversations, which, you know, hopefully will continue, because definitely can't do it all, say it all in 2 hours.
Right. And that's the idea. The idea is to use the Film Festival as a gathering point to stir up the conversation, to activate that conversation. And we know that we're, you know, after the festival, we're probably going to have, you know, maybe a diaspora summit in the East Bay, for instance, have something in the, you know, maybe in the San Joaquin Valley, you know, something, you know, just basically have these, you know, summits or conversations around and hopefully, you know, really have something concrete, because the Africa Union is very interested, you know, mm-hmm. in these conversations. And if we can, you know, those of us in the Bay Area can come together and begin to, you know, become, you know, to articulate much more seriously, you know, what our role as diaspora Africans ought to be and should be. Mm-hmm. The Africa Union is interested in that. And we could become a major force to be reckoned with. And so there's a lot of investment opportunities on the African continent. There's a lot of, you know, opportunities across the landscape, And what we are talking about here, you know, includes, you know, Latin America and the Caribbean islands, because the heads of states of these countries were there, and they were all part of the resolution. And so this kind of, this definitely creates an incredible landscape of opportunity for diaspora Africans in all its in all walks of life, you know, both in the education sector, those in the media, those in business, those in the arts, you know, all over. And this is definitely a true renaissance.
And also a true true manifestation of the reparation.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when one talks about reparations, this is reparations, you know, repairing, you know, the
rift.
Certainly. Well, this has been really a marvelous conversation. And so give us the details again so that people can make sure they get their tickets. Your prices are pretty reasonable as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, for us, it's about making it affordable. For $30, you know, you can get a whole festival pass for the whole weekend and just do anything you want. For $20, you get a whole day pass, you know. And then if you're a student or a senior, you get $5 discount on all of that. And so for $15, a senior or a student, you know, can get a day pass. Or for $25, they can get, you know, a full festival pass. You know, children 12 and under, they're coming free of charge. And so once again, we open on Friday, October 12th at 5:30 with a red carpet reception. We welcome everyone to come to that and then see the feature film for the night. And then Saturday, we start again at 11 in the morning, and we go into till 10 in the evening. And there's actually a big party we're going to have on Saturday night, and so people are welcome to join us. We're going to have filmmakers in attendance. It's going to be like a quasi reception for our filmmakers as well. The Diaspora Summit that we are hosting as part of the festival is going to be on Saturday at 4 p.m. And then on Sunday, we start screening films again at 11. And then at 7 p.m., we're going to close out with the closing ceremony and an award ceremony. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let folks come check us out. You know, look us up on Facebook. And then, you know, also check out our website. It's SVAFF, which is just the acronym for Silicon Valley African Film Festival, SVAFF.org. You can get synopsis of all the films, screening schedules, ticket, you know, you can buy your ticket online as well.
Right, yeah, and I also want to mention that the film festival is, the home of the film festival is the Community School of Music and Arts at 230 San Antonio Circle in Mountain View. So, again, that's the Community School of Music and Arts, 230 San Antonio Circle in Mountain View. And also I wanted you to mention, it was really interesting, the whole idea around the diaspora citizenship, how, you know, I sent you an email and about the Maafa Commemoration Month activities, which is this month, and we were talking about the same thing, and you invited us to participate. So diaspora citizenship and reparations and expanding and continuing these conversations is certainly, it's time for that right now. I wanted to mention, because a lot of times in film festivals, you see the film and it's gone, about the Netflix, African Netflix. So I want you to mention that, give them a plug, because I think that's really fabulous. You're one of your partners.
Yes. One of presenting sponsors this year is actually called Iroko. You know, just as in Iroko Tree, I-R-O-K-O. Iroko is an incredible organization. They have the largest footprint online for distribution of African films. They've been tagged the Netflix of Africa, founded by a young entrepreneur who's actually made it the front page or front cover of a lot of the international business magazines, Jason Njoku. The company is based out of Nigeria, London, and New York. They've partnered with us this year. We're beginning this, you know, what we hope will be a long-term relationship with Iroko TV. They distribute African films, and they're sending their reps to the film festival, which gives our filmmakers direct access to distributorship. And so we're going to be scheduling meetings with reps from Iroko TV with our filmmakers, and they will be discussing and negotiating acquisition right on the spot. And it's something that we are proud about and we're happy about, because this is the trajectory that we want our film festival to move.
Mm-hmm.
In that direction, so that our filmmakers not only are able to screen their films and get the accolades they deserve, but also knowing that as a filmmaker, you ultimately want to be able to place your work and do the next film and get it placed. And so this begins to provide opportunity for them to do that. And we thank iRobot TV for coming on board, and we're looking forward to a much more long-term relationship with this incredible company.
Right, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chike, for joining us today to talk about the third annual Silicon Valley African Film Festival. It sounds simply fantastic. And, wow, I mean, I know where I want to be.
Yes,
yeah,
come on down.
Yeah, I think I might just need to get a hotel down there, because I noticed there was some scrolling down below and just
right.
Spend the weekend.
Oh, actually, and, you know, talking about that, we have some hotel partners that are giving us special festival crash rates. And,
nice.
Yeah, the Hilton Hotel in Mountain View, the Hilton Garden Inn in Mountain View,
mm-hmm.
as well as the Wild Palms Hotel in Sunnyvale have come on to partner with us. And anyone who wants to, you know, a room for the weekend, they will get special off-book rates because they're coming to the festival. And we're going to be putting those, you know, special festival booking links on our website in the next 48 hours.
Okay, cool, super. All righty. Well, you take good care, and congratulations on the wonderful, wonderful film festival, third installation. And, yeah, looking forward to being there and participating in the wonderful festivities and panels and parties.
Yes. good. All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Wanda. Keep up the good work you've been doing, and we appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Well, thank you. We appreciate you, too.
All right.
You
okay.
Take care.
Sure,
you
okay.
Too. Peace and blessings.
All right. So, yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. That was Archie Shepp with Cahil El-Zabar, Brother Malcolm. And I thought that'd be really fitting on the 52nd anniversary of Nigeria's independence. And thinking about Brother Malcolm, and he started the Organization of African Unity. And he was actually a part of, he was there. I think he attended the meeting of the African Union, and that was really unprecedented because the African Union is an organization for African countries, and so that was really an unprecedented occasion for him to participate in that. And he actually, there are recordings of his comments on that. He was quite articulate in his feelings and reflections. So I thought that'd be a great, great conclusion to a wonderful conversation with Chike Noafia about Silicon Valley African Film Festival in its third year. And again, that is in Mountain View, the weekend of October. Twelfth, thirteenth, and fourteenth. That's going to really be fabulous. And also that same weekend, if you're not in the east, if you're not on the west coast, you can still, you know, join us in film appreciation, because in New York, in Brooklyn, there is going to be the 15th annual Real Sisters of the Diaspora Film Festival and Lecture Series. Real Sisters of the Diaspora Film Festival Lecture Series. And I'm like, oh my God, didn't even know about it. And this is the 15th year. And so I had a great conversation this morning that I taped with the director and founder of the film festival, Carolyn Butts. So I'm going to play that interview right now. And looking forward to having folks tune in 6 o'clock in the morning Pacific time for another edition of Wanda's Picks. Be well and think free. So, Sister Carolyn, but tell me about your Real Sisters of the Diaspora Film Festival and lecture series having its 15th anniversary by honoring four outstanding film leaders who have opened the doors for many filmmakers and actors. And the film festival, as I'm reading here, says that it will be held on October 13th and 14th at the Kumble Theater, the LIU,
yeah,
Brooklyn?
Long Island University, Brooklyn campus.
Okay, okay, cool. So tell me about the film festival, because, you know, it's really unfortunate. It's like it's been happening all these years, 15 years, and I'm just hearing about you all.
Oh, no, that's a travesty. We've screened more than 400 films over the past 15 years.
Oh, my God.
It's been a really exciting journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had Anika Shenzilla at our film festival, Nima Barnett, we've had a lot of different dynamics. Julie Dash has been now at Real Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And then we've also had just, you know, like I said, over 400, you know, independent films. They're all directed, produced, and written by women of color.
Wow.
And I don't want to say, because people kind of poke at us about the male aspect, but we do, if a film is co-directed or co-produced, we have allowed it in a film festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we also occasionally invite male filmmakers, especially if there's a really powerful film.
Mm-hmm.
And actually this year, one of our features is Soul Food Junkies,
mm-hmm.
which is by Byron Hurt. And it's really an excellent film in terms of health and what we eat and looking out how we could, you know, maybe not let go of soul food, but maybe make it healthier version in the way we prepare it.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Byron Hurt, people know him from the Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, which was on PBS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a real classic. I show it to my classes when I'm teaching hip hop culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about misogynism and just sort of the ways that hip hop culture has left its roots. But tell us about this this year and what you have planned. I think you just had sort of a round table this past weekend, right?
Was that this past weekend we were on a show, Sister Talk. And
right.
We had a real discussion about, you know, the film industry. So we were also promoting the festival.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what's going on this year, we have some special features in honor of Real Sisters. We're giving a film editing, actually a master film editing workshop, which is going to be conducted by Sam Pollard, who, as you know, has worked on many excellent films with Spike Lee. He's also worked on Eyes on the Prize. So he's given a workshop for filmmakers, a professional workshop on Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
We also are having another professional workshop, which Daphne Reed is going to get on Saturday. So we're really trying to do some extra little things for our 15th anniversary to help filmmakers with their craft.
Yeah. Yeah, Daphne Reed, her name is ringing a bell. When you mention people, tell
it's
us.
One of our honorees.
Yeah, tell us films that we know. Of.
Well, she's her and Tim Reed are our honorees.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done a lot of TV stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done, I think, Real to Real Sister on television.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I'm getting the title right, but they've done a lot of TV and some film work, but they have a production studio, and that's what they're going to be talking about at the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Their production studio, which is out of, it's new Millennium Studio,
okay.
And it's out of Virginia. And
okay.
Not a lot of people know them. You know, they're like the first, one of the first.
Yeah, it's going back to Mr. Pollard. I don't know if he's made other films, but a more recent film that got a lot of awards and sort of stunned people at Sundance was his film A Slavery by Another Name, which is based on the book by Blackmun. What's his first name? I'm drawing a blank on the writer's first name, but I'll look it up. But yeah, that film, it was phenomenal, and it was also shown on television.
Yeah, that was his most recent. I think it was PBS documentary.
Yes. Mhm.
Yeah, he does a lot of it. He as well as being a producer and director himself, he also does. He's known for his editing. He's like one of the top editors in the nation, and we're just very pleased that he was able to, come and do this with us. This is great.
Yeah. Douglas A. Blackmun is the name of the author of Slavery by Another Name. Right, yeah. The reason I mentioned this is because he was on my radio show to talk about this film and sort of its place, because he's real strategic politically and purposeful in the way he does his work.
Definitely is.
Yeah. So the idea that he wanted to do the film Slavery by Another Name, based on Blackmun's book, has a lot has to do with the prison industrial complex and all of that. I mean, it was all intentional. And so, wow, it's going to be really fabulous having that workshop with him.
Yeah, it is, and I hope he will bring clips from his different films, I guess, to demonstrate the editing. So hopefully it'll be from that film, but he's done so many. He's also worked as director on Zora Neale Hurston's film.
Oh, he did.
That was a great film. Yeah, Christy Anderson was the producer, but he was actually the director on that piece.
Wow.
He's done some really dynamic and like you said, purposeful. That's a good word to use, work, in terms of making sure our history stays out there and, he has connections so that, it gets produced, it gets aired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why I founded Real Sisters of the Diaspora, because I found, in terms of women filmmakers, when I first started the film, I was inspired because I found out that less than 1% of the directing jobs in Hollywood go to African-American women. Yeah, so I said, you know, I wanted to have an outlet where people can come and enjoy the films, have intelligent and wonderful conversations about them. You know, and then, you know, we have films that can make you laugh, cry. I mean, we have this film festival, Why Do We Have Black Dolls? And, you know, it's a really excellent film, obviously, on, you know, the images and toys and how important it is for, you know, young people to see dolls that reflect or look like them.
Yeah. And then I like the title, White Sugar in a Black Pot. Who's the director on that one? That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, that's Rachel Johnson, and she actually was part of the roundtable we did on air this past Saturday. And it's really a great film dealing with home ownership. And it's like a family-oriented film where the mother, the wife, wants to own a home, and the her husband is reluctant, and so you see a little dynamic between those two, you know, and that struggle to either become homeowners or not. So it's a really interesting film, and given in the setting that we're in, the climate in we're in right now, where we have gentrification, and people are being, you know, moved out of places. It's really a good film.
Yeah, and then back to Daphne Maxwell-Reed and then Tim Reed, her husband. He starred and co-produced the beloved series Frank's Place and directed Once Upon a Time When We Were Colored. Awesome film. That was really great.
Yeah, and, the title of the, it was Sister Sister that they played on. I think that's how they met or something.
Oh, okay, yeah. And then Mrs. Reed was the mom on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And she appeared in Protocol with Goldie Hawn. Yeah, and then they became, as you mentioned, the co-founders in 1997 of New Millennium Studios, Virginia's only full-service studio complex, hosting films and TV series, specials, and commercials. I thought it was really interesting. I really like, I mean, Black Side Inc. produces The Lies on the Prize, Malcolm X, Make It Plain, classic. Make Me a World. Your tribute to the Black Side and... yeah, tell us about that tribute, and you're going to be having a panel discussion featuring company veterans, moderated by Emmy Award-winning producer and Columbia University professor June Cross. Yeah, tell us about Black Side Inc., for those who don't know about the...
First of all, the whole title of Real Sisters is Real Sisters of Diaspora Film Festival and Lecture Series.
Okay.
And so that's our lecture series part of the film festival.
Okay.
We're presenting this conversation, and we just felt it was important to bring together the people who were behind Black Side, who were responsible for getting these films out, and, you know, they produced so many different films over the years. I mean, we have Ann Bennett that's going to be, she's going to be on the panel, and she is an award-winning filmmaker. We also have Nolan Walker, and he's a documentary filmmaker. He's going to be there as well. And John Elsie, and they're going to just talk about the evolution of Black Side Inc. They're going to talk about the many different opportunities that there still are for filmmakers who may want to produce or have a documentary produced by their studio.
Right, yeah.
And it's going to just be a deep conversation about, you know, the different films, like I'll Make Me a World and Eyes on the Prize, which was a phenomenal series when I was young. I remember that was all over.
Like Roots.
it was like Roots. Yeah, definitely, you know. And we, you know, in school, it's just a film that's still studied by in college and high school.
Yeah.
They play a crucial role in preserving our history and also in giving jobs. That's the to our filmmakers, which is, like I said before, you know, we don't get as many directing jobs. And if we got these directing jobs, you know, that means people who are interested in the film industry as being actresses or casting, you know, in terms of being crew. I mean, it would just really open up doors on many levels once you are at, you know, that top level.
Mhm. Right. Yeah. And I was looking at some of your films from the African diaspora. You know, Saleh. Your I believe that's your it's a film in which a young woman desperate for an education may have to leave her father and village in Sierra Leone. And then you got you know, juxtaposing that with Hubble Diverse Universe.
Oh.
That sounds really awesome.
Yeah,
you know, women as astronomers and astrophysicists.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, was so happy to see this film and to see that there are so many other black scientists, and they're women, they're Latino scientists that are talking about the universe and what it means and exploration.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a really dynamic film that we're very excited about.
Yeah. Do they connect the study of astronomy and astrophysics with like the Dogon in Mali, that civilization, because the Dogon did time travel.
Yeah, no, they didn't. This film doesn't deal with that, but it just talks about the universe and the Hubble telescope and how this really changed our perspective, you know, of the universe and the, you know, the discoveries that were made by this telescope.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
Basically, yeah, they didn't go into that. It would be nice if they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the cut. You know, there's a whole lot looking at, you know, female circumcision, and this one here is like, wow, is this a narrative or is this a doc?
Oh no, it's actually a documentary also, and it's what I like about it is that it took, you know, it didn't take an outsider's view of female circumcision. It really tried to understand the different perspectives of people within that culture, you know, because there's a movement, obviously, by a lot of women and other organizations to obviously, this is a you know, to get rid of it, of female circumcision. And then it also gives a perspective of why, you know, this, you know, tradition evolved.
Yes. For the most part, it's like employment.
It's a balance, you know? Instead of just saying, oh, this is barbaric, you know, because every culture has something that's not. And it's interestingly enough, I had a conversation with a male in Britain, and he was astounded that we circumcise males.
Mm-hmm.
They said they don't, a lot of Europeans do not do that.
yeah, because I asked my daughter, she's expecting a son. I said, are you gonna circumcise him? I said, she said, yes. I said, why? She said, because it's for cleanliness. I'm like, I said, you don't need to cut your baby's foreskin off for cleanliness. He can be clean. I mean, it's not dirty. The foreskin doesn't make him dirty. And so I've already decided, because I'm like, you know, all this misinformation.
That's what I'm saying. That was my response. I had a debate with this man in Britain. We were online. And I was saying, it's done for cleanliness. And he said the same thing. No, that's a cultural thing, basically.
Yeah, because you look at, you know, sort of the monotheistic religions, it's like a ceremony, the whole foreskin cutting it and all that stuff. And in a lot of cultures, it happens when the boys are, you know, come into puberty, just like what happens with
the girls.
When they get cut. It's all a part of this ceremony. But a lot of women who you know, they call them barbers, that's their job to do the cut.
If they
had other ways of making
money
they would go into another field. And so I have a friend who's from Liberia, and she has an organization called Global Women Intact, Asia Ama. She's from Liberia, the borders around Liberia. And she raises money to pay these women to do other things. You know, keep the ceremony, just eliminate that aspect of it. And she's been really successful over the past, wow, must be, you know, 10, 15 years.
Because they understood the reason behind it, and then you could work that out, you know,
right.
Educate people instead of having, you know, like, oh, you know, so that's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so we, you know, we wanted to present this film. We've actually had other films that dealt with female circumcision that didn't get accessible over the years, but this one was particularly good in terms of how the perspectives and how they presented all the sides. So,
yeah,
you know, we think it's a good issue, and we hope that all, if anyone is listening that's on the East Coast and able to come, they will join in a discussion. Every film section, we have a Q&A, so this would be really would probably generate a lot of discussion.
Right, right, yeah, and it's out of Kenya, because Kenya, usually you think about, you don't necessarily think about Kenya and female circumcision.
Yeah,
I mean, that particular country. Yeah, so it's yeah, it's always real provocative, because when I was in Mali, when I was in Gambia, I was talking to some of the men, and they were telling me, one man, and I was on my United States soapbox, like, no, and he was like, listen, sister, blah, 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 and, you know, and the people, women that don't get cut, they're like, they're like these secret societies that they cannot participate in, so they're like always outsiders, and I'm like, well, change it.
And the interesting thing about it, what's really wonderful, too, is that Soleil, the film you mentioned before,
about
female who's, you know, she wants to get an education, but her dad wants her to stay and be a traditional woman, you know, that cultural thing. There is actually a scene in there where she's, like, running and hiding because these women are looking for her because she didn't get the cut yet.
Oh, really?
And her dad has been hiding her.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's definitely, you know, like I said, throughout the different cultures with different applications.
Yeah. Well, you know that PBS has a Women and Girls Lead initiative, and today, October 1st and tomorrow, October 2nd, is the national screening of Half the Sky, and based on the book by Cheryl Wadoon and Nicholas Kristof. And in that 4 hours of film, I think they're going to 2 and 2, that's where they interview a woman who is doing the cut, and that's where she says, well, you know, hey, give me another employment opportunity or a way that I can economic venture.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so ready to give this up. And because I, you know, you can imagine, you know, sort of these women who, of course, love their community having a job of this.
Of doing that.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, the cries and the screams
the
of these children.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're really haunted that they have consciousness. But back to your film festival, you know, today, the day we're speaking, October 1st, is actually Nigeria's Independence Day from colonialism.
Wow.
And I was wondering if you have any films from Nigeria, any sisters, because they make a lot of films there.
Yeah, I don't think in this film festival, but in the past film festivals we've had from different countries, including Nigeria, but not in this particular year.
Right.
But we do have a, going back to American films, we have an excellent film called Daisy Bates.
And I told you, we know that film.
excellent film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was familiar with, of course, the Little Rock kids and, you know, how they integrated the school. But I really didn't know anything about Daisy Bates until this film came in.
She is so overlooked, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. And I said, wow, she played this role. She was a very strong female. Leader doing all this stuff and making a lot of sacrifices, you know, to help these young kids and, you know, just a leader in every sense of the word. And, I'm surprised she's not, you know, given more light.
Yeah, she is really awesome, and I really enjoyed speaking to the director of that film. She was just really phenomenal.
So you had Chandler Cruz on your show?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And she was with us, too, on Saturday, and she talked about the film and also Daisy Bates' history. She had a, you know, her mom died, or both of her parents, and her mother, though, would die very brutally, like by a group of white men. They raped her or something. So she went through a whole period of trying to find out who she was because she was adopted.
And then the way she found that out, you know, was really was really mean.
With the kids and people teasing her, and then she realizing she thought they were her real parents, and so she learned that. So,
right.
You know, for how I guess that explains how this shaped who she was to become in terms of very strong woman.
Certainly strong woman. And I was looking that Real Sisters is a program was founded, a Brooklyn-based film festival founded by African Voices magazine. Long Island University Brooklyn campus. So are you teaching there at Long Island University?
My organization, African Voices, publishes a literary magazine, and we're celebrating 20 years this year.
Oh, nice. You got some nice landmarks. Wow. 15 years for the film festival, 20 years for your magazine.
Yeah, organization. and the relationship is that's the school I graduated from, Long Island University.
Okay.
So I came back, and I had people there, and I approached the media arts. I'm actually a BA in journalism, but I knew people in media arts, and said I have this idea to do this film festival, and they were very open about it. And after we started the film festival, it also inspired them, their department, to embrace other film festivals or start their own. They maybe 2 or 3 years after we started, they started this DVD, big mini DV film festival on campus. Then the Disability Film Festival.
Oh, nice. We have one of those here in Berkeley. Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of good things came out of us, finding LIU as a home for the film festival.
Oh, nice. I bet that's really cool having that kind of institutional support, but particularly around, the educational part, your lecture series. But the magazine, where is that published? How can we get a copy of that? That's
out of New York City. People can go to www.africanvoices.com, and they can find out how to subscribe or get copies of the magazine.
Yeah. Is it a monthly?
It's a quarterly magazine.
Okay.
We publish fiction, poetry. We do community features. We also publish, we just started publishing some short plays. And we cover the arts, and when you see the magazine, if you go to our website, we're very much supportive of the arts. It's, we print artwork on the front and back covers of the magazine. And in fact, in honor of our 20th anniversary, we're doing an exhibition called From Cover to Cover, 20 Years of African Voices at the Schomburg Center in Harlem.
And
it's going to be, as it suggests, we're selecting about 20 covers from over the past 20 years to present these artists, their work. So it's just really a wonderful feeling to have survived all these years. And we are also exploring ways to make the magazine online, to put it, have an online version as well. Right now we don't. It's a print, this magazine.
Okay. Wow. That is really amazing. So do you have like a quote day job or is
since 2007 I've done this full time.
Congratulations.
Challenging. Yeah, it's challenging, but we get grants, we get support from people who. If someone comes to our website and want to make a donation, we have a membership drive.
Yeah.
Because we do events throughout the year. We also do creative writing workshops, like novel writing, and some of them are online as well, workshops. So we do everything, a lot of things to support artists, and particularly in the area of fiction, literature, art and film. Those are the three areas where we you know, do our best to make an impact and to actually have services and also provide an audience for the artists in our community.
Yeah, I was just looking, you know, African Voices is only, you know, for four issues, it's only $20. I'm like, oh, that's so reasonable. Yeah, people could buy a subscription for, you know, women that are incarcerated, for friends, for Kwanzaa gifts. I mean, you are so affordable. I'll be glad when you get an online presence. That's nice, but I'm going to become a subscriber today. Yeah, so tell us about Real Sisters, how people can get tickets, all that.
Go to, that's a different website. It's African Voices. It's realsisters.org, spelled R-E-E-L, sisters.org. And they can purchase tickets online. There's also information about calling the university, which is 718-488-1624. So that's 718-488-1624 that they want to call to get tickets if they don't want to purchase them that on their website.
Okay.
And basically, you know, we just want people to come out. I mean, we're the other person I didn't mention that we're honoring is the cast and director, Winston Sinclair. And she's great. She has a lot of, you know, experience in working with filmmakers. She did the casting for Precious. So she's really dynamic, another dynamic woman. And the other person is Michelle Mentier, who's a very local person who does a lot of film curating. And she has an organization called Creatively Speaking. They also work in helping distribute films as well. And I think she was one of the distributors for Daughters of the Dust.
We
have a lot of, you know, really dynamic people in addition to Daphne and Tim Reed that we're honoring. And the ever wonderful, someone I really love, special person, Terry Williams of the Terry Williams Agency, is going to be hosting. She's going to be the mistress of ceremonies for our award ceremony.
Well, since your film festival has been around for so long, I'm sure, you know, you have a huge following. And so, like, do you do the red carpet thing?
Well, you know, we don't do red carpet, but we, you know, we have a lot of fun. You know, it's in a university, but it's a very wonderful auditorium. It's about 320 seats. And I like the type of stage where, you know, it just flows into the audience. Like the first seat, you're almost on level with the performance. You feel like you're almost on stage with them.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
beautiful.
That's great. And your festival, is it for, you know, all ages? Like, do you have sort of a youth track or family-friendly track?
Yeah, we have some films in the festival that families can go to, like the White Sugar and a Black Pot and this and that. We have the film Little Brother. Didn't talk about that, but it's a film series that Nicole Franklin has been doing. Where it really interviews and deals with the life of African American boys, ages about 8 to 10. So that's a wonderful film for people to see. And we also have My Therial Boys. This is a film on autism about a mother who's raising two young boys who are autistic. So there are quite a few films that are family oriented, and we said we were gonna, you know, make mention so people know that. But usually, this is a special year. Usually we actually have a separate teen section too.
Oh, okay.
But for our 15th anniversary, because there was so much going on, we, you know, decided not to do that this year, but just to integrate some family films.
And I know you said you have the lecture series, which I believe happens throughout the year, not just at the film festival. Do you also, like, have any kind of initiatives where you're in the community with, you know, sort of helping young people do filming? Like, because I know there are a lot of programs here where people are in, you know, doing work like the Museum of the African Diaspora has a youth media project, and they help young people like actually make films and become more digital savvy, and, you know, websites, and, you know, becoming more familiar with social media, as well as, like I said, making films telling some of their stories. Do you do anything like that via Real Sisters?
Yeah, we don't do that educational component, but we do a presenting component where we bought segments of the films, and some of them are by teams that we will bring to the public library. We did stuff at Brooklyn Library. We have an initiative called Tea and Cinema where we bring segments of the films. I mean, last year we had a film that we did with another, we presented with another organization called Harriet Returns. Yeah, excellent film. It's a short, and it's dealing with the N-word. It's like very, it's kind of comical. You know, it's a little
weird,
but it's really serious and educating young people. It's like Harriet Returns to this century, and she sees the young men who are, you know, teenagers with their pants down and calling each other the N-word. She's like, I didn't do all this for that.
I think I spoke to that director, because I think she brought her film out here. I'm trying to think, as a part of the the film festival with the sister, the Black Women's Film Festival here. Her film was a part of that film festival.
I'm so glad we've worked with her. Like, not only was she in the festival last year, like I said, we did another portion of it with another organization in the community, and we brought her out and another filmmaker. So we do that. So if someone invited and calls us, the number is 212-865-2982, and they want us to come out. We're willing to try to see how we can make that happen.
Okay, awesome. Yes, so people can go to Real, R-E-E-L, Sisters, S-I-S-T-E-R-S, .org, or Kumble Theater, KUMBLETHEATER.org, or call 718-488-1624 or 347-534-3304. All this is at realsisters.com if you have a computer. to find out all about this wonderful film festival. Congratulations on the 15th annual, and hopefully we'll be talking soon again. I really would love to just talk about your magazine. I got to become a subscriber first so I can see one, have one in my hand.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I mean, I think you would definitely, I know you will appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, wow, that's so nice that you've had a magazine for 20 years now.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa, I mean, wow. We did.
Yeah, well, that's actually my main thing. Like I said, my background is in journalism as a writer, so yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at the beautiful, you know, art on this current issue. All these girls sort of lying together, sort of like.
On that issue, we were celebrating Black theater.
Oh, okay.
So they're like actresses on stage, and you see people seated.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
nice.
We actually in the Herb Boy did a really nice piece where.
I know him.
Yeah, I know you know him. He's done a zillion books on different historical figures. And so he did a sort of overview for us of the different black theaters throughout the country.
Nice.
So we actually listed them and gave website a little information about them so that people could support them and go out and see what they have each season, because black theater is very important.
And there aren't as many as there used to be. So we gotta know about them and support them for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, I know you have a meeting, so you've gone over.
Thanks so much. Hopefully, we'll talk again, and maybe next time I can bring one of the two filmmakers at least on the air with you.
Oh, that'd be excellent. That'd be super. Yeah, because your film festival is not until the 14th. So, that'd be great if we can have you on again. You won't be rushing off to a meeting. But I'm really happy that, I mean, make my apologies for you because I know you're late. But thank you for fitting us into your schedule, your busy, busy schedule, to talk to us about this wonderful film festival, Real Sisters, and congratulations on all of these monumental, experiences, I guess, that you're having, like 20th anniversary for your magazine and 14th for the film festival. That's really awesome.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a great day.
All right. Well, you take good care and have a wonderful Nigerian Independence Day celebration. You know,
thank
the spirit
you.
Of it, I'm sure, you know, freedom, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Sure. Bye-bye, Carolyn. Peace and blessings.
Right.